Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast, the week of August 16th through 23rd. This week we're joined by W. Malcolm Burns, the author of the article A Biomedical Revolution in the Current Issue of America, which looks at the promise of the induced pluripotent stem cells and how they may be a pro-life alternative to the experimentation on embryonic stem cells. iPS cells, as they are known, were first discovered in 2006 in Japan, but some additional testing needs to be done for them to be useful in the laboratory. I discussed this and other issues with Professor Burns, and I began by asking him to describe the difference between iPS cells and embryonic stem cells.
Well, induced pluripotent stem cells are produced from ordinary adult or somatic cells from an adult human body. The way the process works is that a set of factors are introduced into the cells, and they work to reprogram the ordinary adult cells into induced pluripotent stem cells that very closely resemble embryonic stem cells, in that they have two important properties. The properties of self-renewal, meaning that they can grow indefinitely in culture, and also pluripotency, meaning that they can differentiate into all the different cell types of the body. And these are characteristics that embryonic stem cells also have. So it appears that these cells, these iPS cells, are very, very similar to embryonic stem cells and can potentially replace them in various types of experiments and therapies that embryonic stem cells could be used for.
Now, what kind of therapies are we talking about? I know there's been some discussion of embryonic stem cells and some of the promise they may hold in dealing with certain genetic diseases. Is that what the hope is here, too, for the iPS cells?
Yes. So, for example, potentially with spinal cord injury or Alzheimer's disease or diabetes, these cells could be used in cell replacement therapies as a kind of regenerative medicine. So that's one of the hopes. But they can also be used for what are called disease-in-a-dish studies, in which one can follow the progression of a disease looking at cells in culture. And the way that this is done with iPS cells is that cells are taken from the body of a person who suffers from some genetic disease, Lou Gehrig's disease, for example. And then those cells can be reprogrammed using the procedure that I mentioned, and then differentiated into various tissue types and studied in a dish. So in this way, the cells that are studied are have that particular genetic mutation that people who suffer from that disease also have. So you can study the disease progression in culture.
Now, as you note in your article for America, scientists haven't quite reached the point where embryonic stem cells, or the study of iPS and embryonic stem cells are kind of interchangeable, and that some additional testing has to be done here, and that could pose some ethical issues. Maybe you could describe that.
Yes. What scientists are discovering is that although the iPS cells that we currently have available, using that procedure that was pioneered by Yamanaka with the four factors, although those cells are very, very similar to embryonic stem cells, we're discovering that they may not be identical. And this has been uncovered through some detailed molecular studies, comparative studies, comparing these iPS cells with the embryonic stem cells. And that is very important because we need to know, you know, how closely they match up and how well they can be used to replace embryonic stem cells. So some would find that ethically problematic, that embryonic stem cells have to be used for this validation process, for these comparative studies, and also to eventually improve that iPS reprogramming procedure.
Now, you mentioned Professor Yamanaka. He is the initial scientist who made the discovery back in 2006 in Japan.
Right.
That was greeted by a lot of excitement at the time. But as you were mentioning some of the ethical issues involved here, but you believe, although the Vatican hasn't weighed explicitly on this question, in the recent document, The Dignity of the Person, there was some language in there you thought could be applicable. Maybe you could explain that to us.
Right. When Dignitas Personae was put out in December of 2008, it addressed the ethical issues surrounding a number of things, stem cells, pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, cloning, and so on. One thing it did not explicitly address was induced pluripotent stem cells. Now, there's a couple of reasons, potential reasons for that. One might be that it was a very new technology at the time, and the Vatican wanted to move, you know, carefully and cautiously in addressing this very new technology. But one thing it did talk about was how it could be ethically acceptable, perhaps, to use vaccines that were produced by cells obtained originally in the past through abortion, that could be, that the person who used that vaccine or who had his or her children vaccinated would not necessarily be complicit in the original act of killing the human fetus, because, and so that was the argument that was presented there, Dignitas Personae. And what I feel is that a similar argument can be made for using these embryonic stem cells to validate iPS cells, as long as it's over a defined period of time and not an ongoing destruction of human embryos that takes place. As long as this happens over a defined, discrete period of time after which it's over, then one could use a similar argument to say it's okay to carry out this validation process for the time being.
Now, you cite in your article some inaccuracies that, in at least the Church's understanding of this issue, and one of which seems to be that there's some confusion, at least in some quarters, about what adult stem cells versus these iPS cells, and as you point out, there is an important difference there.
Yes, there is an important difference, and the difference is that iPS cells are not a type of adult stem cell. They are stem cells that are derived through this reprogramming procedure from adult cells, but they're not a type of adult stem cell. And I think there's been a lot of confusion about that, including in Catholic quarters. You know, adult stem cells are known to be ethically non-problematic, and iPS cells also have been promoted as an ethically non-problematic type of stem cell. And so I think that what happened was that people got confused and thought that perhaps iPS cells were a type of adult stem cell when that's not the case.
At least in pro-life quarters, as you suggest in your article, there would be some hope that at some point the use of iPS cells could replace entirely the use of embryonic stem cells. But are there some in the research community that want to keep that option open and basically continue all lines of research?
Absolutely. There are some, and I don't feel this way myself. I feel that, you know, we can move away from embryonic stem cells. We can move toward iPS cells, which are ethically non-problematic in terms of how they are obtained or generated and used. But there are some, and maybe perhaps many, scientists who would like to keep both options open and see which particular kind of stem cell, you know, proves to be the most useful and for therapy or for experiments.
So I guess it seems to me a difficult conversation to have, how to persuade somebody who would perhaps hold that thinking to abandon that particular line of research if they don't have the same ethical problems. At some point the Church faces a challenge to make a case not based necessarily on just sort of faith or a religious understanding, but based on science. But you still think that case can be made?
Well, I mean, it is a matter of give and take. It's true that if scientists who feel that we should pursue embryonic stem cell research have the upper hand, so to speak, they may not feel inclined to give concessions and to say, for example, that we should use only embryonic stem cell lines already derived for this validation and improvement procedure. And once we've perfected the direct reprogramming technique, and we have iPS cells that are just as good, to abandon embryonic stem cells. You might ask, so what incentive do they have for the abandonment of embryonic stem cells for research? But you know what's interesting about that is that even James Thompson, who was the first person to isolate stem cells from IVF embryos in 1998, even he said if a person is not at least a little bit uncomfortable with destroying embryos to get embryonic stem cells, then, you know, we should be a little, he was saying, you know, if you really think about it, you end up being a little bit uncomfortable. If you're not uncomfortable, you haven't thought about it very deeply. So I think that, you know, if we can get iPS cells to be just as good as embryonic stem cells, I think the tide will shift. And the other reason why the tide is in fact shifting already is because iPS cells are so much easier to generate in the laboratory. You don't need access to IVF embryos. You know, you can do it. Many different labs can do it around the country, and in fact are doing it already. So it's a much more attractive technology from a scientific point of view.
Well, maybe you can just introduce yourself and your particular area of research for our listeners. You teach down at Howard University in Washington, D.C.
Yes. I am in the Department of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology, and I teach medical students, pharmacy, graduate students, and I have a small research laboratory. I study the structure and function of biomedically relevant enzymes from bacteria mainly.
But you've also written about bioethical issues, not just for America, but for other publications. Are these questions, at least in your experience in medical school, that are being discussed in a way, you know, that are the younger generation of physicians are at least engaging these issues?
Well, I don't teach that myself in the biochemistry course that I teach, but certainly these are important issues for all of us to grapple with and to, you know, to be aware of and to understand and to, you know, to have a voice in, to have a say. So I hope that, you know, the public becomes much more educated and aware of all the issues surrounding stem cells and particularly become educated about induced pluripotent stem cells, which I think are just fantastic and have a chance to really revolutionize not only biomedicine but also this ethical debate that's been so intractable in the past.
Yes, it seems like when this discovery was first made in 2006, which you referenced earlier, there was a great deal of excitement about it in the pro-life community, but also in the larger scientific community. But you don't hear as much of it these days, at least perhaps if you're outside of the circle of this research. And it sounds like perhaps the complex nature of these questions has kind of turned some people off, or at least there hasn't been as much engagement as you'd like to see.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, early on in 2006, 2007, when the procedure was first developed and then applied to human cells, there was great excitement in the Catholic Church and Catholic leaders spoke out favorably. Lately, there's been less talk about it, and I'm not sure why. Now, the scientific community is still just as excited, if not more excited. Many more labs are doing this, are developing iPS cells and using them in research. You know, and there are advantages over embryonic stem cells that I mentioned, not only not requiring access to IVF embryos, but also being able to do these so-called disease in a dish studies, which are so much easier to do with iPS cells than with the embryonic stem cells. So there are some clear scientific advantages. There are certainly clear ethical advantages since they're not obtained from embryos. And so it's sort of a win-win situation as long as we can get beyond the requirement to validate and perfect the technique using embryonic stem cells. Once we get beyond that stage, I feel that, you know, everyone can be enthusiastic. And it's perhaps this requirement that we use embryonic stem cells for the validation and the improvement of the procedure that the Catholic Church has not been as vocal. There's still that bit of residual ethical problem there.
Well, Professor Malcolm Burns, thank you for introducing us to this complex subject.
Well, thank you, Tim, for having me.
We want to thank you for joining us for this week's edition of the American Magazine Podcast. I encourage you to look online where Editor-in-Chief Drew Christensen has a video commentary on the failure of Senate legislation on climate change. We also have two culture reviews, one on the newly remastered film Breathless from Jake Martin, S.J., as well as a review of the film Lebanon. Reminder that you can respond to our podcast by going to americanmagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.